Welcome to New England Soccer Journal's The Goal Podcast, the podcast for serious soccer players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their soccer careers. And now, here's your host, Matt Langoni.
Welcome into another episode of New England Soccer Journal's The Goal Podcast. Today I'll be joined by Loomis Chafee boys soccer head coach Scott Halpern. Scott, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's we're almost into April here, so it's not really prep soccer season, but I still enjoy talking prep soccer in the off season, and it's actually kind of an interesting time for your program and all NEPSAC programs because, you know, within the next few weeks, you're going to be adding some new students and potential new players to the program, and we know there's still off-season training and conditioning programs that the kids are on and stuff like that, so it's always good to talk shop in the NEPSAC space. So first and foremost, let's quickly recap last season for Loomis. How did you feel like the 2023 campaign went for you? I know the Founders League is always super competitive and there's always a lot of contenders in that league, but how did it go for Loomis?
Yeah, absolutely. It's for us, it was we'd say a successful year. Obviously making the Class A playoffs is a great accomplishment in itself. There's almost 30 teams in that Class A group, and to be in that top eight is difficult. We went 12-5-2 and we got in as a sixth seed. The margins are super small between all of us at those eight teams. For us, we had a really, really young group. We graduated 13 players after the 2022 season, and it wasn't a rebuild. It was more of a retool year for us at the 2023 season. And I think a couple guys were shocked with where we ended. But I think within our culture and in our group, we were just about on par with where we thought we could end. And obviously, you're pleased but not satisfied, right? There's only one team at the end who's really satisfied, and we're chasing that team. But for us, it was a very successful year and a great one to build on with a lot of returning pieces.
How difficult is the Founders League to navigate every year? I mean, there's so many top quality programs. I mean, I guess you could say that for many leagues throughout New England, but particularly the Founders. And I know on the girls' side, it was a race too as well. So it's a soccer-rich area. So how tough is it to get through that schedule?
Yeah, certainly. I have tons of respect for what these guys do and in the Founders League. Even before I came to Loomis in 2022, I was at UConn for 5 years as an assistant coach. And the recruiting in the prep school world, the Founders League is very well known from Avon to Choate, Westminster, Loomis. The list goes on in that group. And we're always vying and competing. Taft, of course, can't leave them out. And it's always a challenge every year. Those games, looking back on the year, the margins are so tight. We're all recruiting the same type of kids. It's such a saturated area. Like you said, it's such a soccer-rich area. But it makes for fun. It makes for a great environment. And I can tell you, being newer to it in the last 2 years, these coaches in the Founders League and in the NEPSAC, we all do for the same purpose. And the world's really tight. And we all just want to see each other succeed and do right by the kids. And it's been a great experience. And all of us are super competitive. But at the end of the day, you really applaud and celebrate each other. And it's been a great experience. And I'm sure it'll get even tighter as we go.
You mentioned the recruiting aspect. How is it looking for your class of 2024 players? Do you have a few committed right now? Are there still kids making decisions? Where are we at with all that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. There's some committed, some still pending. I think one of the biggest, things that people don't recognize in this world, and like I said, coming from the University of Connecticut, where a lot of things are in your control, a lot of things in the prep school world are out of your control. The coaches do the job. They do the recruiting. You spend a year, sometimes 2 years, a year and a half building rapport with families. And then at the end of the day, it really comes down to things that are out of your control in the admissions and the financial aid piece of things, kind of like a mini Ivy League school in a way, I'd imagine. But for us, we definitely have a couple kids we're excited about coming in. We still have some things that are being tied up, but I think we're all vying for similar situations right now with kids. April 10th is kind of D-Day for all of us, where the kids have to decide where they're going to be attending their 2024 academic year. But we're excited about the group we're bringing in. I think it's really, really important. I think what I've learned is that good players don't make good teams. There's so many other variables to good teams. And I think everybody, the coaches you ask, everyone's going to say, we got good players coming in, but really the proof's in the pudding, and we'll see what happens come the fall of 2024.
Before we jump back into the kind of the the new players coming in and that whole process of bringing new players into the program, I wanted to kind of get back to kind of the outgoing players, the class of 2024 players who are looking at the college game. It seems like the recruiting process over the last few years, we actually have a story about this in our recent magazine, the recruiting process over the last few years, because of COVID and because of extra eligibility at the college game and because of the transfer portal, it's been a little more difficult for players to hook on with college programs. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, if a college coach has the choice of taking a 21-year-old kid with 3 years of college soccer under his belt or an 18-year-old kid who's never played the game, I mean, they're going to lean towards competitively that 21-year-old with experience. So are you seeing that as a coach in your journeys of helping kids try to find their college home? Are you seeing that it's been a little bit more challenging over the last couple of years?
Yeah, it's a great point, Matt. And absolutely, to answer your question bluntly, I think the recruiting landscape has changed dramatically over the last 5 years. Even before COVID happened, it was the best teams in college soccer were getting some older international players. Some of them were getting obviously very special 18-year-old kids coming out of the woodwork in MLS Next and in prep school and in things like that. And they're still getting them. But the transfer portal and COVID and those things have certainly dramatized and escalated the what you're saying, right? The older player staying in longer, recruiting the older player to stay relevant in that game. And it's just making it harder for a pure 18-year-old to come out of prep school and make an impact in a way that a college coach needs to, right? I think the college coach's job is to look at our player and put him in their environment and see what that looks like, right? And it takes time. Everyone needs to adjust, even at our level, but 100%. We're seeing that top-down effect, no question about it. But, you know, it's the reality. It's where we're at, and it's what we have to deal with as coaches. And me in my role, a lot of what I do in my role is really educating and advocating and helping our players through that process. And you have to manage those expectations and roll with the punches as they go. And I always say the data shows us what we have at the end of the day, right? But it's been interesting for sure. The last 5 years have really changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a brave new world. These college athletes can really advocate for themselves and kind of find their next landing spot. I mean, you see it even in college basketball. You're watching March Madness and like a team will get knocked out of the tournament and a kid who had a key role on that team, like 48 hours later, is already in the portal and looking for his. So it's like, wait a second, you just scored like 15 a game on a team that was in the tournament. And now you're moving on to the next place. So it's like they can constantly be on the lookout for what their next home will be. Do you think in general, though, the portal is a good thing for the college game? Because you've been at the college game, you've seen, you know, what it's like in terms of roster building.
Certainly. I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing at the end of the day. I think giving players more freedom, giving coaches more accessibility for players, I think is a good thing. I think the methodology and the way it's happening can get a little chaotic and can have effects in both good and bad ways. But I do think it's a great opportunity for the players. It happens at the pro level, right? So I think it's very similar. I look at the transfer portal situation like free agency versus drafting, right? And I think you know, getting the 18-year-old prep school kid is a draft pick, right? You're investing time, you're investing resources and hope that he develops into something you project to be, rather than going to get the trade or the free agency and getting the right in player that you need. And similar to what we do, right? Like some of the programs have post grads at the prep school level, right? I consider that quote unquote transfer portal or free agency.
Sure.
Or, you know, repeat 11th graders, repeat 10th graders, those happen, you know, coming from public school into private school. That's, I consider that the transfer portal in a way that we do here. So it's, you know, do you take the 9th grader who's 13, 14 years old and develop them into whatever position?
120 pounds soaking wet. Yeah.
Right. Or do you go get the kid who's a post grad who's going to be the right in player for you? So
right.
We deal with the same challenges here. And it really is just keeping up with the Joneses. We know certain teams are going to have more heavier post grad rosters than others. For us, we don't really have that. We have maybe 2-3 tops. But it's very different based on your resources. And I think it's the same at the college level. So it's a good thing overall, I think. And there's just good and bad consequences that come with it, right?
Right. I mean, the good news for players playing at Loomis is you guys have a tremendous track record of producing college players. I mean, just this year you had Austin Bush at UNH, you had Kieran Chandler at UConn, just impact players. Will Cleary at Stanford. I mean, those are big boys in college soccer, and kids from Loomis going there and putting up an impact right away. What is it about Loomis, do you think, that really prepares these players for the next level? Because the track record of the program over the last many years of sending kids to top-notch D1, D3 programs is pretty unparalleled.
Yeah, well, I think that's been happening long before I stepped into this role. Coach Tim Helfrich, who's been at the helm for a long time, has done a fantastic job in instilling and providing that platform. Coach David Malloy taking over after him and for a couple of years there and doing a great job and being a great colleague with me. The platform's been set. And I think here it's something where it's just a place where it's diverse. It's in right smack in the middle of Connecticut, where there's a ton of club opportunities. So our guys are fortunate enough to have opportunities all year round that are of the highest level in the country, you know, without us having to go out of our way to maybe provide that at times. But the history here is huge, right? It's so illustrious. And I think what we've done a really good job with is really promoting our players and building that rapport with coaches and being honest. I think I get a lot from college coaches asking me, I'm getting feedback about this guy. Like, can you tell me the real truth about this guy? And I think being honest and both with the college coaches, but also with the kids and the families, I think is really important. And I think we've done a good job at navigating where guys fit and how they can fit and what their personality is and how it can relate to the college game. And I think it's just what this place has done a fantastic job of coming in here and realizing is the diversity of colleges that our boys and our former players have gone on to, I think is well beyond some of our peers. And for whatever reason, I think it's just because of what I mentioned. It's just being honest and being able to place players at the right places.
You made that great point earlier about kind of the similarities between the prep school game and the college game and just the transfer portal and free agents and all that stuff. And as we mentioned, April is a key month because that's when new players will be kind of deciding on their prep school future. And I know you're looking to add players to your program and think future and not just 2024, but further down the line. What's the process like for bringing in new players? I mean, everyone's trying to sell their program to these to kids. You all have all the prep schools in New England all have something to offer, something great to offer. So how do you get Loomis to stand above the rest? How do you go through the process of getting these new players on board?
Well, I think, Matt, like you mentioned, the history of the program speaks for itself. So we're very lucky to be able to have that behind us already. And as I mentioned, I think having a lot of club opportunities around us, it also helps the specialized soccer player that's looking at boarding school opportunities. For me, how I think you recruit inside out. And by that, I mean, you try to get the best local talent in a 10-minute radius as much as you can. And as you mentioned, it's such a saturated environment for the prep school. So a lot of them are being recruited by other prep schools and good opportunities as well. But with our history, with what we've done, some of those advantages that we feel we have, the school itself academically has taken such a turn in Dr. Colbert's time here the last couple of years. It's really pivoted into almost a top 10 academic boarding school as well. So I've been telling families we're kind of the Stanford of prep school right now. We got the academics and the athletics at a really, really high level, and we're proud of that. But really for me, Matt, the process of it all is it starts with the person. Obviously, I'm going to local games. I'm going to certain showcase events. I'm doing that work behind the scenes. But a lot of it really is getting to know the kid first. But you have to be talented to be here. You have to be talented to play at a level like this. So that's a given. But I think the lines of hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. And I can make good people into good players, but not good players into good people. And you hear the buzzword of culture so much now. But what really is that? And I think it's just a lot of really good people with good intentions all doing the same things at the same time for the right reasons.
Right.
And that's what I'm recruiting, right? So in Zoom calls, in phone calls, in meetings, maybe going to their homes every once in a while, going to lunches with them, going to dinners with them, spending time with them, getting to know them and understanding, is this a person that can really help our culture? And do I see developing into a real talent down the road? And if it's not, and it's someone who's maybe missing some of those qualities, those are non-negotiables for me. When we have four pillars in identity for us here at Loomis, in effort, discipline, respect, and grit. And when I'm watching players and I'm talking to them, those are the things I'm looking for, right? Are they giving the maximum effort in everything they do? Are they disciplined on and off the field in their academics and in their athletics? Are they respectful to their family? Are they respectful to the teammates and myself? And do they have that grit, right? When things get hard and when the ref calls a foul on them, they get a yellow card, coaches yelling at them, how do they respond? And those are the things that I look at more than I do how many goals did they score and how many assists did they get.
Is April as a coach, is it an exciting time for you? Is it more stressful than in season when you're kind of just strategizing and playing? Or is like the idea of, and this can go back to, you know, being on college campuses and being in the college game, is the recruitment aspect like super stressful for you?
It's both fun and stressful, right? I think it's, everybody loves fantasy football and putting teams together right, all that, right? I think it's, you get excited.
But nobody likes getting rejected either, though.
But I'll tell you what, man. Yeah. The biggest adjustment I've had to make coming from the college game at UConn is you have no control.
Right.
You have no control over what the package looks like, whether they get accepted or denied. It's really all on them. It's really all on what that picture looks like. But you take a year and a half of your time and you invest in that relationship and it falls short for you at the end of the day. And that's just something that you have to live with. And for that reason, I've casted a wider net than ever before, constantly trying to recruit because I know I'm not going to get them all.
Right.
It's part of the fun. And I think I'm an associate AD here at Loomis. And I think the most important thing an AD can do is hire the right people. And I think it's the same as the soccer coach, making sure I bring in the right people to the culture, to the team. And it's, recruiting is the bloodline, right? I think that's the line. And it certainly is. You need good players to win, but it's not good players make good teams. That's for sure.
I can imagine it's probably interesting. Like you guys and Avon are going for the same player. You guys and Hotchkiss are going for the same. I mean, just what's that like? Discussions you have with coaches at other programs, is it like, oh man, you got him? Is there like some like friendly rivalry with the whole recruiting thing? Are you guys like, I mean, because I gotta assume a lot of you are going for the same types of players.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a, obviously you're tighter with some guys than others in the league. For example, I'm very tight with Carl Stenson over Avon, but we don't talk to each other about a lot of details of those things.
Probably good for the relationship.
End,
yeah. Yeah.
At the end, maybe we'll talk about those things. It's kind of like on game day when we're leading up to that.
Right.
But it's you're right. It's from all the way to Exeter and Andover down to even down south into Jersey with some of the NEPTAC schools there. And it's every fit is different for every player, for every student athlete and their family. But we think our opportunity and our offering is very different to some. And I think right now we're rolling in a really good place. And a lot of it is timing. A lot of it is again, out of your control too, right? Certain packages and certain things can be offered at other places. And some schools are financial aid need-based. Some schools are merit. Some schools can give scholarships, things like that. And same at the college level, right? And it just has to be the right fit for the right family.
Right. Now, did I see you're from Jersey, and did you play for Tab Ramos growing up?
I did for a few years at Cedar Stars Monmouth before it was even called Cedar Stars Monmouth.
Wow.
It was called NJSA 04, and then Tab then moved on with the U20 national team at that time.
Right.
And yeah.
But just, I mean, being around, a guy of his stature in American soccer, that must have been pretty cool as a young player.
Yeah, certainly. And he's beyond that. He's been a great mentor to me. We still touch base every once in a while. And he's a great inspiration to be around at that age. I tell these kids here all the time, some of the things I learned, I took for granted then.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he would jump in when he was, 40 years old and he was megging me left and right. He was he still has. But the knowledge of the game and the tactician he was and the youth development that he has in his mind is really, really sharp and so unique. And I was super grateful to have that experience for sure. And it's definitely a lot of things I took away and I've brought into my own coaching philosophy and what I do with the boys on the field. But yeah, what a great opportunity it was for me looking back on it to just have a couple years with him.
Now, did you play at a public high school or a prep or private, or where'd you go to high school?
Public guy.
Same with me. Same with me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I like the prep school world, I didn't know a thing about until I got to UConn.
Right.
And the prep school market up here, as you mentioned, is
steep.
You know, it's huge. Yeah. It's deep. It's huge. It's impactful. And there's some really good players in prep school world that make impacts at the highest level of college soccer. So I had to start recruiting. And honestly, that's how I knew about Loomis Chafee. When in recruiting, Will Cleary and Ollie Martin and right. You know, all those guys, and they didn't end up going to UConn, but they went to some good places.
Yeah, do you have that pride going to a public high school? I mean, I still feel like I have the public high school. There is a certain pride you keep going to like a public high school and playing for your town. I mean, we know the prep schools is phenomenal, but I mean, it's a phenomenal level of soccer, and they those players go on to contribute a great deal to society. But the public realm of just playing for your town is pretty cool. I mean, when you get to your high school.
It's huge. Yeah. It for sure. I mean, I'm in addition to the associate athletic director, one of the things I oversee too is it's called the LCAA. It's a Loomis Chafee Athletic Association.
Yeah.
Basically a bunch of student athletes who are trying to create school spirit around games. And one of the things, I was that kid at the public high schools, like in leading everybody in chants and getting in front of people and going crazy. And like you're saying, it's something different with your public school in that realm of things. I still, like we're saying, in the transfer portal at the prep school level, I go to some public school games and I'm watching him, and it's fun to be around. Those playoff games and some of those back and forth games are chaos, and that's part of the fun, right? Yeah. So for sure, there's value to that.
Yeah, you gotta love it. So we're about I don't know. So it's April. You guys will be starting up the season in September, so we still got a ways to go. But I mean, I can already tell you're enthusiastic about getting back out there and starting up the 2024 season. Do you feel like Loomis is going to have, coming off last year's success, going to be able to take another step forward this year?
Well, I'm an energy guy, Matt.
Yeah. I love it. You
could ask the players, you could ask the coaches. That's my thing. I think I might be the youngest coach in the NEPSAC right now, but I'm all juiced up. I'm an energy guy, but. You know, I like I said, I think the proof is in the pudding. Like I say, every team's going to say they got good players coming in. I'm confident and excited about the group we have coming back. If we can get the new guys to buy into our culture that we've instilled here, understand what the expectations are to put on that Loomis jersey and be really good community members, I feel really strong that we could take another step here. But right now, I'm more of like a Greg Berhalter on the national team, just watching our guys playing club soccer and keeping tabs and just trying to help them as best I can.
Right.
And then getting them in for the quote unquote national team at Loomis for a couple of months, and then they go back to club. So it's more keeping tabs on them now, getting excited and putting pieces together and getting going for September, like you mentioned.
All right, well, now we're gonna translate this high energy into our extra time segment here with our producer David Yaz, which Scott, I warned you about this. It's gonna be intense. We got three random questions coming from David, and we'll see what he's got for us today.
It's the end of regulation, so let's move to extra time.
All right, let's do it.
All right, you wanted the intense version of extra time.
There's no other version.
I don't right. know. Whatever that is, let's just do it.
All right. What happens, well, right? Well, this first question, I guess you could say it is intense, and we'll start with you, Scott. The question is as follows: what's the most pain you've ever experienced from being struck by a soccer ball? And I didn't say what that could be, any part of the body or any occasion.
Is this a PG-13 podcast? Yeah.
We want the raw truth.
It's not after dark yet. We're gonna.
I guess. I mean, I'll go there if we can. I don't know.
Yes, you can. We all know the sensitive area for males.
In that area, yeah. I'll never forget. I'll tell the story. It's a funny one. Okay. It was actually my public high school days. I was a senior, and it was a throw in. The left back's taking a throw in for the opposing team. I'm playing defensive center mid. I'm marking a guy, and he goes to throw the ball into him, and I'm marking him, touch tight, as they say, and he whiffs on the header, and it just directly falls at speed right into that area.
Right between your legs.
And I went down. I went down like an infant, and the ball, God, thank goodness the ball went out of bounds, and someone like got injured or something. It wasn't me. Like, there was a stoppage for some reason. And I legitimately turn to my teammate and I'm on the ground. I'm like, I don't know. There's something really bad happening here. I'm not sure what's going on. And you can imagine what that was like. But that was, I think, besides getting hit in the head maybe pretty hard, that was probably the worst.
Yeah. Your potential family lineage passes before your eyes. Whenever that happens, I feel like every male with an eye shot gives you a little sort of sympathy cringe. It's like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah. That we've all, listen, if you've played the game, I think we've all been there maybe once or twice. You know? Yeah.
Right. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, that goes without saying, those low blows. I mean, that's happened throughout any athletic career in any sport. Those are bound to happen. I had one going up for a layup in basketball in time where my coach had to call a timeout before I could shoot the free throws. I mean, it was like I needed like a double timeout before I could shoot the free throws. But
that's right.
My worst thing in soccer actually wasn't, it had nothing to do with the ball. It was we were playing in a summer league going into my senior year, and we were playing in Ipswich, Mass. And the game was probably 3 minutes in at best. And I went in for a slide tackle and I got the ball, but the kid continued with his foot after the ball was taken out and just kicked me right square in the face, split my top lip completely, there's no visual here, but like side to side. I had to go, my mom was there. I had to go to the hospital. I got like 28 stitches in my mouth. It was just brutal. There was blood everywhere. Luckily, no damage, no teeth knocked out or anything like that. This was pre-mouth guard, too, so we wasn't wearing a mouth guard or anything. Like I think because it was summer league, you got away with a little more, but I think that year in high school, they made it mandatory in Massachusetts to wear a mouth guard in soccer after
maybe,
that.
But, maybe it was because of you.
Yeah, I might have set the rule there, but it was brutal. It was 3 minutes in, blood everywhere, slide tackle, foot in the face. It was bad. That's the worst injury I probably had on the soccer field.
But you look,
People don't really realize that soccer, it's pretty physical out
there.
Oh,
man, it's very physical.
Not a lot of protection either.
Anybody who says soccer isn't physical doesn't watch, doesn't know soccer. Yeah. Because go up for a 50-50 head ball with another dude and a ball coming at, complete physicality. Anybody who says it's not is stupid, really.
Well, at least you look tough the next day at school, Matt, with the scar.
Oh, you know what it was? Actually, the next day was two days later was the big 4th of July fireworks out in Beverly Farms that everybody went to. So I went and my mouth was swollen as hell. And everyone was like, what the hell happened? It was rough.
You should see the other guy. That's all you got to say.
That's right.
Question number two, Matt, you can start with this one. Now, follow me here. According to a piece on sportskeeda.com, if there is ever a film made about the life of Lionel Messi, there are five good candidates to play the soccer star.
Huh.
And I'm going to ask you which you think would be the most appropriate. Number one, Christian Bale, probably most famous for Batman or American Psycho. Number two, Eric Bana, who was starred in Troy, the Hulk, and Dirty John, among others.
Yeah.
Boston's own Matt Damon. Tom Hardy, who's the British actor.
You might
know from The Revenant and Lawless.
Yeah.
And then number five is Lionel Messi himself. Could he handle the role?
Well, playing himself. Yeah, I mean, playing himself, that would be, I don't know what his acting chops are. I mean, I guess you can't know any better to play yourself than yourself. But I would actually say Tom Hardy or Christian Bale would be my two picks. Tom Hardy's an interesting one. I never really even would have thought it. And I actually watched The Revenant recently. It was on TV when I was in bed. I watched it. Again, it's a great movie. Mm. Great actor. I think he's got a slight resemblance to Messi a little bit. And then he might be, based on appearance, I would say Tom Hardy. Based on acting, I would probably go Christian Bale. I mean, the guy can just do any role,
He
was phenomenal in The Fighter as Dickie Eklund. I mean, he sells himself out for any role. I think he would be great. And even, like, appearance-wise, you can kind of see some similarities in his face to Messi's face. So I would go Bale or Hardy. I guess I'd say I'd ultimately go with Bale, I think.
Okay, I'm contacting Hollywood now. Scott, you get a vote too. Christian Bale, Eric Bana, Matt Damon, Tom Hardy, Lionel Messi himself. Or if you want to go off the board, you can go off the board.
I mean, this might be the most challenging question I think I've ever had. I mean, Messi is Messi, right? Like, he doesn't really say much.
No.
So, it would be interesting to see Matt Damon playing Lionel Messi. That's for sure. But I would agree probably with Matt here. I think Tom Hardy would probably take my bet as well if I really had to choose one. But probably Messi is Messi. If someone really put me in the producer's room in Hollywood, I would probably say that.
How about Brett Goldstein, the guy who played Roy Kent in Ted Lasso?
Ted Lasso? That's an interesting one. Yeah.
All right. Final question for extra time. What is the perfect score of a soccer game? And by that, I mean some fans might prefer to see a 1-0 game. Other fans might prefer to see a 5-4 game, but you can pick any score you like. Scott, why don't you start with that one?
Well, I think the biggest thing you hear from a lot of people is that there aren't enough goals in the game, right? Obviously, those who really understand the game and are maybe like watching it for really diving into it, maybe understand and would prefer less goals. I would probably say 3-2 with the third goal being in the 94th minute of extra time.
I'm glad you said
that's
that.
That's exactly what I was going to. I'm not even joking. 3-2 is going to be my exact answer.
With no shootout goals, obviously.
No.
Nothing like that.
Because with 3-2, you get five total goals, which is going to please anybody who wants
a
offense.
Lot, yeah.
But there's also, that leaves room for some great saves by a keeper. That leaves room for some great defensive plays. I mean, that's like the perfect soccer game, 3-2. If you were, during the season of 3-2 games, I mean, people who are slow to come to soccer, I think would be more into soccer if you saw a lot of those games.
Yeah,
game with five goals, that, I mean, it's almost like every goal is kind of a plot twist in a movie, right? And if you've got five of them, that's quite satisfying.
And you don't want too many because it detracts. I mean, if it's like a 6-0 game or a 6-1 game, I mean, obviously one team's terrible. And it's not, a 3-2 game is a competitive game with offense.
And you're hopeful they're good goals. You don't want an own goal.
Rough, fluky goal.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you, Scott. Thank you, Matt. You've both successfully negotiated extra time. And as a result, I'm going to see what I can do to get you a role as an extra in the Lionel Messi movie. We'll have our people contact their people. And back to you, Matt.
That might have been, of all the times we've done extra time, David, I think that was my favorite question. That one was really good because I didn't even heard of that. And I hope they do make a Messi movie because Messi's interesting because it's like, you know him as a soccer player, but you don't really know. I mean, he's not from our country, but you don't know that much about his life. And I would like, I think he'd be a fascinating, I don't know. I haven't done a deep enough dive into his background and his life, aside from the fact that he's one of the probably three greatest players of all time.
If there's not we need a Tom versus Time style documentary about Messi, right? And maybe there is one out there.
I'd much rather have a beer at a bar with Messi than Tom Brady. I mean, Messi, Brady to me is like, as a great as he is, his life has never fascinated me. I don't know. I might be on an island. That's a podcast for another day.
The Brady army is coming to remove you from the studio.
They're all the time.
Be careful.
All the time.
You're in the wrong area. You're in the wrong area to say that. That's for sure.
I'll die on that hill. I that's what I think. But hey, Scott, this was awesome. I'm glad you took the time and looking forward to the prep season coming up. And obviously, best of luck with the rest of the offseason and prepping the team.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. I mean, you guys have been doing this for so long now, and I really appreciate what you guys do to help the kids and help the teams and help us be as impactful as we are. As you mentioned, I think it's, you guys are certainly a big reason why the Founders League and the NEPSAC is as prowess and as well known as it is. So I really appreciate what you guys do. And if there's anything I can do to help you guys, please let me know.
Appreciate that. And appreciate all our listeners. And I'm Matt Langone. And New England Soccer Journal's The Goal podcast is produced by David Yaz and is a Siemens Media production.
You've been listening to New England Soccer Journal's The Goal podcast. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to our podcast. Or visit nesoccerjournal.com/podcast. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.